At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Comedy Store would like you to know that the views and opinions expressed on this podcast are strictly those of the speakers or authors and do not necessarily reflect or represent the views and opinions held by the Comedy Store and its affiliates.
Okay, so this is the Comedy Store podcast, and all we do is talk Comedy Store, your stories here, your history here. And I am Eleanor Kerrigan, and that is Rick Ingram.
I'm Rick Ingram.
Hi, my name is Mary Lynn Ricecob.
Such an easy name to pronounce once you know how to pronounce
once
it.
Once you know.
So confusing.
Once you unlock
though.
The secret to the garden and open it up, you can come right in.
I was always curious.
I like that.
And I'm like, I don't know how to say that. And then
I
saw you tweeting someone the pronunciation. I'm like, oh.
I had a thing
where you have a phonetic way of.
I do. It's a little rice and a cub emoji. The only reason why I have that is because I was touring a couple of years ago. It was when I started doing that hardcore, and I worked with a woman, you know, when you're like, I'm really gonna do social networking right, and she was great, but she came up with that. I mean, it didn't
pick up like you were hoping.
I did not sell thousands of tickets. I sold tickets when
but rice and cubs are so cute.
They're so cute.
Like, I usually put a cub and rice together.
Right. It was an adorable way to say my name.
Say my name. Okay. It's the headphones that make you
hate singing. That makes me want to sing more because he hates it so much.
Listen, singing brings people joy, and I'm against that in principle.
Come on. You so are not.
In this holiday season? Like,
all you want to do is make people laugh. You live for that.
Right? And he does.
That's the sweet irony of my life.
And you do, too. You make everybody laugh with your rice and your cubs.
Yeah.
It's amazing. No, you are fantastic. When did you start doing stand-up?
Someone, who was I talking to? It wasn't Adam. Reminded me that I ran a room in the belly room in the 90s.
I feel like that's where I met you first.
Could that be
Duncan
true?
With Duncan Trussell.
Well, he worked here.
I know.
I was dating him.
But sorry about that.
I didn't perform here at the time because I had sort of, I was a product of the alternative scene. So coming to the belly room to
now
do.
Those are more trigger words for Rick. So you got to be careful.
Let's get into it. Into it.
Damn it.
I want to get into
She's
it.
She's going to destroy me.
Let's get into alternative. Listen,
first of all, hold on. You dated Duncan Trussell?
There's so much to unpack here. So much to unpack.
Okay.
By the way, I completely admire you and think you're a rock star.
By the way, she's looking at Rick. When she said that.
I feel like we
have bonded. You're a total rock star.
I'm just making sure.
But he and I have never really talked.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, like communally, we've been in the same group conversation.
And you realize that I directed that to him after you said the trigger of alternative comedy.
Because
then I jumped ahead and I thought that I think I'm all that, which I am, let's be honest.
I wanted to give him
some props.
Thank you.
Oh, I'm glad then.
I'll sit and wait and watch your sets because I like you
want to know what to do.
So, handling
not to do
the audience, manhandling
that's
the audience.
This one. He sexually assaults all night long.
I'm the Harvey Weinstein of comedy, strictly in the way I make
only
the audience
inappropriate.
Feel. Yeah.
It's amazing.
Everyone leaves a victim in a Rick Ingram show.
The way you wouldn't make eye contact with me and the way you keep 5 feet between you and other people at all times.
Always.
It's conscious
aggressive.
Of you.
Yeah.
Oh.
It's who I am. I'm just trying to be a successful Hollywood man.
Okay.
And,
how's that going?
I am really terrible with all of my sexual aggression.
Okay.
And so no one even knows I exist, really.
Oh, okay.
But I'm working on it, you know? I'm going to try and get creepy.
You got to get it out there. It's more of the unpacking.
I'm going to get creepy.
When we unpack Marilyn, then we'll unpack.
Okay.
Can you imagine in this day and age, you've got to be more sexually aggressive? You know, starting in 2018, that's going to be your resolution.
Like, he's not being noticed enough. Oh,
it's so hard. You know, we all have our own path.
People don't respect me for my lack of respectability, and I need to get there. Like Kevin Christie said, he's like, you know, we're sexual cowards. What can we do?
Oh, right, right.
Yeah.
That's a great way to put
that's
it.
That's where I am.
Or queer.
Never.
Now,
well,
wait
a minute. Wait one goddamn minute.
So did you run a room in the 90s? Or you don't remember? But I just know it was the late 90s.
No, I did, but it's confusing because it was alt and we really didn't. I'm not saying we didn't belong here because really the Comedy Store.
Oh, we are.
Was very, but it was very different at that time. It wasn't, it was before, no one was really going in
it
the
was
belly
our,
room.
It
there
was
weren't
our
really
dead
any
years.
Shows in there.
Yeah. No one was going to any room.
We called it our dead years.
But especially the belly room. And so they were kind of like giving it away. We did an alternative room at the, you know, that coffee, it's not a coffee shop. It was like a club. It used to be the, it's across the street on Sunset. I don't remember any of the names of it, but a friend of mine, we did that. At a few places. But yeah, at the time, I would have never gotten into comedy had I gone straight into comedy thinking I was going to be funny. And I never idolized comedians. I never identified with stand-up comedians. I was did acting when I was a kid. I did acting in high school, and then I went to art school for painting. But I honestly, because I didn't want to be around actors, but it was really the only thing that I liked. So I was like very bottled up inside, and in art school, I started doing performance art, and I loved that when I would go to open mics, and people would go for poetry readings and take the stage alone, and I was just fascinated by, you know, there was one place where it was a transvestite from the street, you know, and I'm in my early 20s, I'm in San Francisco, I'd never seen anything like that before, I was just like, tell me more. Like, I could watch you read from your, you know, she's reading her poetry.
Yes, I
want to
hear everything.
And so all these open micers, I was just like, eating it up. I just liked the solo performer, even in my performance art, where other people would have like a body sock covering their eyes and their ears, and they would go down flights of stairs, and that would be their piece. Mine was always, I'm performing, and you're going to sit and watch me. I never conceptualized like I'm taping my genitals, although I did do that for comedic purposes.
Naturally.
But you know what I mean? My
I do
performance
it every night.
Art was very, I would have disjointed sentences. I wouldn't know what was coming out of my mouth. And I was like, it was almost like I was boiling over inside. And so when I saw these performers, and then the comedy clubs were closing in San Francisco, so a lot of comedians would come to these rooms, these poetry rooms, and it would be like Patton Oswalt and Blaine Kapach and Greg Barrett, Jeremy Kramer, who doesn't perform anymore. But at that time, I was like, oh. Because they would do stuff that they wouldn't do at the clubs, but they were so onto themselves and their voice, and it was so clear that I was like, I like that.
So it was just a way for them to work out, you mean? Like they weren't necessarily doing performance art. But
No. They were doing...
It was just an open
mic
in terms of you could do whatever you wanted.
You could do whatever you wanted.
Okay. Free form.
So then I started hanging out with more those people, types of people. And
I like that you said those people.
Those people. I don't know. Well, I don't know. Was I putting myself in the third person? Or who was narrating that story there? That would be my
negative life.
Yeah. It was just singling out that they were clearly not as good as you. Which I respect.
By the way, my favorite people. I was just like,
what you want to do.
And to be clear, when I was in art school, those were not my people. So you're joking when you think I'm better than them. Because I honestly was like,
you're joking. Yeah.
Clearly nothing about me spells out.
Great when we have to explain the joke. So that always works out. I'm excited about it.
I don't know him well.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
I don't trust men.
Smart.
This is a
very
close
smart.
I tried
face.
To compliment him to You've... get him to open up to me. So
he has better hair than us.
Better
Come
hair
on.
Than both of us combined. Better right. boobs.
God damn it.
Better vagina.
Listen, I've got a dad bod now. I'm working
on... How many
on
kids do you have?
Just one.
Okay, how old?
She's 16 months.
Holy shit.
Yeah. He's in the trenches. How old is she?
I'm stay-at-home dadding. It's a nightmare.
Oh, because you'll be up in the morning and all day.
Yeah, I get up real early. My wife works regular jobs, so I got to be real
that
adult.
That makes me feel Mr. better Mom. Because I do the same. I'm here, if I come here late and then I'm up early
yeah.
and I'm trying to take it downtown for a nap in the middle of the day
yeah.
and do like a split
yeah, if she shift. If she naps, I'm going for it. I'm yeah. like, oh, this is my time to sleep. Otherwise, I'm going to die.
How long will she nap? What's the longest nap?
I mean, usually she naps for like an hour and a half. But
never long enough.
No,
never.
Exactly never. Right. I mean, I probably drank 6 cups of coffee a day just to survive.
Yeah. My mom always says that, sleep when they sleep.
Yeah.
And I was like, that doesn't make sense. But then we're all sleepers, so I was like, oh, now it makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, my son's 9. And I feel kind of sad and angry.
Whoa.
And frustrated.
Why?
As I was putting him to bed, and then he said something like, "What? You know, I feel like something's missing in my life."
Your 9-year-old said that?
Yes.
Oh my God.
I didn't know what to do. I almost shit my pants. Why. He goes, you know, what's the point of life if you're not living?
Amen. Amen.
At nine.
Little misanthrope. Has he been right? listening to Mark Maron? We need to get to the bottom
of
this.
And then we're talking, and then he finally, you know, I'm like, well, actually, that's one of life's big questions. I go, everyone, adults want to know that. And he goes, yeah, I mean, if you're not having fun, he goes, I do schoolwork and I play basketball. I said, well, isn't basketball fun? And he's like, there's a big pause, and he goes, I want to go to Six Flags tomorrow.
I love it.
And I said, I want to have a nap and do a yoga class and get a massage tomrow. In other words, like, no.
We're not going to the Magic
this
Mountain.
This whole thing is not.
It was a ploy all along.
Yeah, it was a ploy. He got me. He knows what
Very
I like.
Very good.
He
knows what I like. Pull you in like that.
See, I thought, there's something going on. I'm going to go to his school just to show you, you know, a sign of friendship, and I'm going to bully his bullies. But now I feel like he was just conning us all
now,
along.
We should just keep bullying him.
What I'm going to do is I'm still going to go to his school. I'm going to slap some people around.
You just want to do that. Yeah.
Listen, I just need to feel like a big man, all right?
They would get real nervous.
He did also say, I mean, there was a lot of different, I think that part of that was a ploy, but then what did he say? Because he goes to a progressive school, so they call it groups instead of grades.
You triggered Eleanor now. Progressive school.
What is progressive triggered? School? Is that like hippie thing?
Montessori-ish.
Well, this one was started. Should know better. The person
just say
that it was
it's
based
like alternative
on,
comedy.
Oh, it's the alternative comedy of education.
But mine was started by communists who were blacklisted in the 40s wanted a experiential based. Learning
Antifa so that education
so that you're not doing it by rote, you're having the learning be grounded in something that means something to them.
My God, I'm from Kansas, that wouldn't be allowed.
Yeah,
if they're
I'm
like
from Philadelphia. Built,
so, yeah,
that doesn't
I'm from Michigan.
Make sense.
We don't, yeah, no, we don't like but, if they're building something, then the math according to the thing that they're building, type of a
wow,
or they'll like design a restaurant and
a kid,
yes, and then they'll. Have to serve and know where
school.
The food comes from, and so it means something to their life. So they make
that's oh. yeah. I mean that makes sense. There's some of the kids
that's
I grew up with.
That's a very simplistic way to.
They should have just taught them janitorial stuff instead of algebra.
True, and I'm one of those kids.
Yeah,
so.
It's like, why are we wasting time teaching
guys,
these kids?
Let's go
stuff.
To janitorial school
together. I think we should.
Listen, every day.
Start our own plumbing company.
When my baby loses her shit and I literally have no idea what to do because I didn't read any books and I just thought it would work itself out.
Right.
I think I should have been a custodian or something.
Right.
But is there anything about your behavior that you're like, oh shit, I better correct that and not pass it on to my kid?
No, I don't think so. I say a lot of inappropriate shit, and now she's starting to repeat words. So now I'm like, fuck, I gotta watch what I say, because she just will repeat random things. And, like, there's no rhyme or reason to it. It's probably what all
and
kids
it means
do, I don't
nothing
know.
To her.
But, like, it's just the most random shit. She'll be, like, the other day she just pointed at my backpack, and she goes, backpack. I'm like, how the fuck do you know backpack?
Nice.
And that means I say a lot of really inappropriate words way more often than I say backpack.
Sure.
So
backpack's the least one. Like, she's just showing you, hey, daddy.
Yeah. Backpack. That's once a year, maybe.
Fuckhead. It's coming.
Wait,
she's
going
to say
all
it.
The fucking
like, oh,
words
shit.
In the backpack. Yeah. No, so but you're a stay-at-home mom. You work.
Thank you for that. Right. I haven't heard that since I had Thanksgiving last year with a 75-year-old businessman who looked at me and said, you don't work. And I was like, go on. I've never heard that or been that in my life.
You were just filming a movie in Atlanta for...
Yeah, and when I go, my husband has to do everything. But he owns a small fitness studio. So if he's up in the morning doing classes, which isn't every morning, but I'm always up in the morning. Like, I'm just always
up.
We trade.
Okay.
It's like a halvesies.
And that's perfect.
Yeah, I wish
to have
I had
that kind of help.
But sometimes the halvesies becomes like an allsies.
He's in the allsies right
I'm
now.
I'm in the allsies.
And I'm not in the you're inspiring me again because you're really toeing the line. That's a lot to have a baby and to be the person. Both my husband and I have very flexible. We go back and forth.
Oh, that's good. Like that he has flexibility.
And then when I go, he has to do everything type of thing.
Right.
Because I was out of town for 4 or 5 weeks on and off.
Right. Were you coming back and forth? Wow.
Yeah, I did a couple
times. That's amazing.
Yeah.
God bless you for that.
Yeah,
this
crazy.
Is a big movie.
This is a big movie.
With a lot of comics in it.
I'm really excited.
I know it. Al Madrigal's in it. Who else was there?
Tiffany Haddish. It's a Kevin
I've
Hart
heard of them.
Vehicle.
I know
well,
them.
It's actually a Kevin and Tiffany. But it's produced by Kevin's company. And it is a true ensemble.
Yeah,
but
that's awesome.
They're the driving, Rob Riggle, isn't it? Karen Killam.
Is Kevin Hart super... douchey now that he's extremely successful?
Not at all.
Because he used to be super nice.
Not at all.
Yeah, he's super.
But I just
nice.
Feel like he's so big at this point that at some point he's going to have to snap and be a total asshole. He's got to.
He's so nice.
Yeah. He was always nice.
He just kept
that.
I Philly.
Think he's one
that's
of those
Philly.
Guys.
That's, what it is.
That's right. He's a Philly guy.
I think
guy.
He gets it. And I know. I think he, just from being around him a little bit, my sense is like he doesn't want to forget it. He wants to know where he came from. That's also part of the success, you know. I was like,
yeah,
where he's there and he's present when he's doing the thing.
He does
now, mind you. It's, you know, to me, I was like, this is a really big movie, and he's like, this is one of eight major things I'm doing right now.
Yeah,
and he takes it seriously, and he's there,
everything.
And he loves it. But he's also like, yeah, this is one of. He would go
many
and do,
projects.
You know, three or four
stadium
shows on the weekend, and that was just
Jesus.
As much a part of, yeah. And we're like, we're going to sleep. Like, you're in every scene in the movie, and you're going to go and do.
Yeah, I think he made like $70 million or something last year.
That's it?
That's it.
Okay.
But, you know, again, I made $23,000, so we're in the same ballpark.
terms on of, the spectrum.
Yeah, we're in the money spectrum.
But he does so much for, like, he puts money back into his community in North Philly. He grew up, and he puts a lot of money back in there. And I love that about him.
Yeah.
That's a good,
that's
a good person trying
to
rectify. I will.
I know the suburbs of Kansas City where I'm from has not seen a dime of my money, if and when I ever make any.
Would you ever put money back
where
in
are you,
Michigan?
You're from Michigan?
No, I'm really on the spot because I've had money to do it and I haven't done. No, I.
damn it.
I would. I just.
Yeah,
don't,
but you have a kid. You have a.
Yeah, I'm
more responsibility.
I actually put it in my act. It took me a while to come to terms with it. Of where, I made a lot of money on TV and I spent that money, which is sort of revealing. But I in that way where it's like, ew, why is she? But I kind of love that whole area of like, yeah. This is how it happened. Here's how it went down, you know. I'm in that spot where I'm still maintaining living in L.A. and having a family, making money. You know, I could have done better with what I had when I didn't have a family, you know, and I just kind of like.
Look, were you making $60 million dollars a year?
Exactly. It never. Because
until then, I don't think anyone's expecting you to.
I should have done better with that seed money.
All right,
I just,
she was
like,
making $60 million.
Okay.
That's very good.
No, you were on 24 for
a
long. How long was 24 on?
24 was on for like 8 years, and that was a really
A big show.
That was an amazing thing. It was a big show. I definitely grew up as like a person, as an actress on that show, and it took me a good 3 years to admit, like, oh, this is what I do. I'm on this show.
Right,
you're a real actor now, and then, you know. made a lot of money for me, but probably not a lot of money in the scope of money.
In Kevin Hart spectrum.
Yes. Okay. But, oh, that's where I was going with that. But I did, looking back, I mean, I think I just thought, well, this is it. I'm going to keep working. And I have been working. I have no complaints, but I did not maintain that money.
Oh. Right.
And I did not ever go into another show. Like, that is few and far between.
Yeah.
And it also, the way it was structured, it's not like a syndication thing. It was one of the first serialized shows. You know, it just wasn't that situation. I was like, I'm a guest star. I'm on the show, you know. And then,
yeah.
You know, before I knew it was over, and I was like, okay, that was great. And
oops.
What's
and
next?
Now.
We write 25.
Exactly. But there was a moment where I was like, yeah, this is what happens. I'm on shows now, right? And
yeah.
it just never kind of
That's not
leveled
real.
Off. So
yeah.
Then I had to, after I sort of was like, woohoo, I'm going to spend whatever. Then it was like, oh, okay, I can still do this for a living, but I don't, I can't, I have to figure it out. And then especially when you get married and have a kid, you're like, all right, we have to like ration this up. And
yeah.
Especially when he's wondering what's worth living for. I mean, you know, there's a lot of places he wants to go in life, and Six Flags is very expensive.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
So,
I mean, maybe, and this is just a theory, because when I go to Six Flags, I know I'm going to feel better about myself physically. And I appreciate the multi-ethnic ugliness of the human beings.
You look at your wife and go, I want to go to Six Flags tomorrow.
So why? I don't feel good about me. I want to go to the United Nations of Unattractive People.
Yeah.
I don't know what life is about. I just want to go.
Tattoo or whatever that stupid roller coaster is called.
Oh, I love roller coasters.
That's all they have.
But do you like the ones that are...
Oh, wild.
All
upside down.
Okay.
All of them.
I can't.
The crickety one. There was an old one that I swear...
Colossus.
Yes.
They took it down.
Colossus.
Going on that one, we recorded it. Like I was with Freddie Soto and he videotaped the whole thing and you could hear... It sounds frightening.
Yeah.
And there were certain points where it was like, oh, we're going to fall off. And we did that last.
That's the one from...
we did all the others.
That's the one from Vacation.
No problem. That was the one that was... Yeah, that was the one that scared
the
shit out of us.
John Candy and the crew.
Oh, yeah, Wally World. Yeah,
Wally
yeah.
World, that's it.
Wally World. Of course, I know that because my brain is mush. I don't even have a kid, and I know all the children's
Yeah, but that's a classic. That's an 80s
yeah,
classic.
I don't like when the roller coasters are like, we're going to make you...
Throw up.
We're going to make you die and come back to life.
Shit like, out just, your liver.
What's
go
that?
On a ride.
The liver
ride.
Shitter.
Yeah, you just want to have a nice time. What's that one? It goes, is it Superman, I think? It goes straight up.
Yeah.
And then it goes
yeah.
down. But it goes so
They're
fast.
They're all terrible. I've sworn I'll never go there
and
again.
And I had my friend's hand in my face because it just gets stuck. Because she's like, oh my God. It was my friend Corey. And she's like, I got to put my sweater on. And her hand got stuck while we were. And I'm like, bitch, I'll fucking
That's
kill
my
you.
Favorite.
It was awful.
My friend's hand was in my face. And that's my roller coaster
like,
ride.
Yeah,
I didn't even
I'm not
think
sure
about
that's a regular
stupid
experience.
Ride. But I, because.
You know, Six Flags. There's always a hand in your face. This seems like a very personal.
I just got so mad because I was like, I can't even enjoy this ride because your stupid pinky nail is in my eye. Like, I'm supposed to be looking up and
See,
be feared
for
my
specific.
Life.
Yep.
That's
yeah.
how you do it.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Building
she
up.
Had us
Sorry.
And then she got in there.
Yep.
Well, that's what I do. I start on the outside and then I get inside.
I tried to go once when there was a fire and... they closed it right as we got to the parking lot. I was
oh,
so
really?
Fucking mad. It took like 3 hours.
Oh,
there was a fire. Oh, okay. We got a 10-minute warning from the great Danny.
Oh, that is
Thank
nice.
You, sir. Anywho's, so Wait. Okay, so let's go. You're from Michigan. What part of Michigan are you from?
Trenton, Michigan, south of Detroit.
Ooh,
south
very Detroit. Nice. Trenton, New Jersey. I know that.
She shakes her head. No, it's not nice.
And when you came out here, so you were doing those rooms. You went to San Fran. Were you going? You were going to school in San Fran?
I was going to
art
school. I was finishing art school there.
Okay.
But yeah.
And then you started stand up down here, or
I started there, but it was very alty.
What is? I still don't know what that means.
Alternative.
I mean, I know we have alternative comics, but your goal is still the same thing, though, right? You still are wanting to make people laugh, or are you just trying to be extra creative?
Let's unpack it. What are you gonna think of that?
I explained what I thought alternative comedy once, what it was, and Moshe Kasher was like, "That's not at all what an alternative comedy
really?
Is." And I'm like, "Oh, I don't know."
What did you say you thought it was?
I said,
"You don't mind.
Alternative,
you're not gonna like it."
Alternative comedy is like when you want people to think you're clever and not funny.
Oh.
And he was like, "That's not what it is." I'm like, "Well, that's what it seemed like. I don't know."
I guess for me, I didn't really identify with comedy, and I liked it when it was more confessional and more
okay.
I was very improvisational. I didn't do things twice. I remember that was a big thing, like, oh, you're going to repeat your stuff. And
when I started, I was the same way. I didn't was I alternative when I started?
Yeah,
probably. And
I
personally just needed to express myself that I, for years, would be like, you got to get a sketch packet. But I was so locked up, like, write
oh,
jokes.
You got to say that over again. Sketch packet?
Sketch packet in the 90s when you submit your writing. But the gulf between me as a pent-up want-to-be performer and being able to construct a joke was... I didn't have any concept of, I knew people were laughing, but I didn't know why they were laughing. So okay. I would go on stage in this tightrope of it would either do really well or really fail. And either way, I was in the zone of like, people knew that I was doing that. So it almost was like, not fail proof, but like if it failed, it was within this.
You were still following your rules.
Following my rules, and it wasn't in a club setting where you right. definitely feel that anxiety. Even when, for me, early on, before I started touring a lot, I think it was like at the Comedy Magic Club or something, where I knew what I was doing and that my thing was like uncomfortable when I, and you know, it was constructed and I made sure that a laugh was coming up, but they were like, oh no. We right out of the gate, we don't like, they didn't accept that I was playing a character.
Yeah, because they want.
And so for me, it's almost like I came at it backwards. I had to work on who the narrator was. I had to work on not mumbling and changing what I was saying in between it and just being more clear. And also because I have an acting background, or that's an easier route for me, that I also had to work on not projecting my feelings so that people would be like, oh, well, we just feel bad for you now. So, you know, you're like learning these things the hard way. Not the hard way, but when you're doing like rooms that are in bars or in coffee houses, it's easier to not.
They're more accepting of something that's not cookie cutter.
There doesn't have to be a form.
Right. It's not, well, here's the setup. Here's my punchline. Tag the punchline. Taggist.
And
the
also
punchline.
For me, I was just needed to do it. And hanging out in that environment was as much a part of it. So I had tons of stage time, but I had never really, every once in a while I would get lucky and have something that could be construed as a joke that I would repeat. So because I did a lot of performing. Yeah. So I would have... It was almost like just working in a uber organic way where I would sometimes have fully formed things, but I never worked at it because I didn't know how to. And I didn't care to study it, in my opinion of myself, is because I was like sort of damaged socially and I needed to like kind of become a person before a joke writer.
Right.
Interesting.
Or I needed to do it through performing and then kind of... Realize what it was.
Yeah, I like that more.
It's a better way to put it than what.
Well, I mean, that's just
saying.
My own. I'm sure.
No, but it's
true. I just hate joke writers.
Yeah, and but now when you came here, the Comedy Store, you start showcasing. You showcase for Tommy. Is that correct?
I
Because you never showcased Duncan. Duncan was the talent coordinator here.
I was.
You showcased a
Mitzi
different
was
way.
Still passing people then. Though,
I
wasn't
never.
She?
But Duncan would have set
here.
It up.
Oh yeah.
I never performed here.
Is okay. Adam? Did Adam pass you?
Adam passed.
Me. Adam brought you in. Oh okay.
And it was all. And I only came back here after I had been on the road for, you know, a year and a half. And I thought, all right, I've done an hour on the road. I'm gonna come back to the Comedy Store. There was one time where. Bobby Lee walked me up to Tommy's window.
Oh, boy.
And Bobby Lee was, like, so sweet. He goes, oh, you don't know her? Like, she's been on Mr. Show. She's done all this stuff. And Tommy totally gave me the come and hang out. And at the time, I was like, I have a life. Like, I can't. I will definitely come and do 5 minutes. But I can't just
hang
out for a week.
See, I don't understand
I will come
that.
To an open mic. I will come to whatever show, but I need to know I have a set. Like, I can't.
Some people say that, like, oh, I don't hang out enough at the store. That's not what it is. You want to be here if you're getting a spot. That's it. You don't have to hang out here like that.
And so,
like,
that was when he, and Bobby Lee was so generous to kind
and,
of.
By
like,
the way, that's why Rick left, because Bobby Lee has brought everybody into this club and got
and
them passed. I'm not kidding.
Really?
Almost every person we've had on was like, Bobby Lee helped me get past Bobby Lee. I'm telling you. So
but
it's
he's,
just,
I did not get passed because of Bobby Lee. I got passed because
of
Adam.
No, because a crazy man named Tommy was running the booth.
Is that true, Bobby Lee? Who else did he get in here?
Oh my God, so many people. I can't even think of.
Is he genuinely pissed?
No. He's got to do the main room. It's a money night for him. His spot was at 11:15. I don't even know what time it is. But this is what we do. Like, if he has to go do a spot, we go do a spot. If you have to go, you know, we just kind of run it. But I thought it. Whatever, we could have started it earlier, but I don't think I was clear either.
I was not clear. We should have voice called, like
we so
like the old
should
days.
Have because I was goddamn driving for 6 hours from Vegas. It took 6 hours to get home today. I was so pissed.
I never want to leave you waiting like that, my darling.
No. I had to close the first show in the belly room anyway, okay. So I was here.
Oh, you were at
and
Tammy's?
Then yeah, I did the first show, and now I have to do the second show, and then I'm on at 12:30. You're on at 12. I'm on at 12:30.
Damn.
When you said 1, I was like, oh, wow, that's late. Am I on at 1:30? Because I knew I was like right after you.
I didn't know until I looked at Twitter that I was on at 12. I don't know if I got moved up or if I just got the message wrong.
No, I think you just got the message wrong because I got a 12:30 in my phone and I'm like, there's no way I'm on before Maryland. That's just not how life works. At the world famous, yeah. Well, no, because I know my spots, and they like me late night in that original room because it keeps the crowd, but it's like still they get wild. They start at that point, they're drunk. You know, you go on at like a semi normal hour.
I do
10:30. Yeah, it's an hour and a half into the show. They start at 10:30.
Yes.
So then that extra half hour, now people are leaving, they're signing the check, and they're like, who could deal with this? Who's used to having people walk out on them? Eleanor, let's put her on.
I feel like I get those late night spots and there's like this, there's the drop off of people that leave, and then the people that
there's always that there's a weird one in the main room a certain time. I swear it's like the comic before seems to be having the time of their life.
Yeah.
And then it's that one little time slot. It's like 12, I think, or 11:45, depending on what time the show starts. And it is a mad rush of everyone leaving.
And so do you mentally, when you go into it, do you know, you're like, okay, that's it's going to happen? Or do you wait until you get out there?
Wait until you get out there, because you don't know which person you're going to be. It's hit or miss. It could be they stay for you and then walk out for the next person, or they walk out for you and then you have to set it up.
So you
for
go
the next
out
person.
and you're here's what I want to do, and I'm saying it, so you feel what it's going
to
be like.
You have to be prepared for everything.
And then
I
what
think.
Do you do when you get the
if
when
they're
tired?
Out.
Not even the walk out, but the
tired,
and they're there.
I kind of get tired all the time, but I just try to bring more energy to show them that hey, you can be up at this hour. If we're here, we already made it. So let's stay up. You know, I don't know. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Like, I get mad if I can't get a crowd to turn.
Yeah.
To come back, like, it's okay, guys. I know it's 1:45, and I've gone on at 1:45 in the OR.
Will you say that out loud to them?
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but here's my question to you. When you started doing the stand-up, which I hate to say this, but I know what you mean by repeating.
Yeah.
So it's a repetitive, it's more of an act versus a clearing of like what happened that day, which some comics do that as a set. And you're like, no, don't do that. because sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. There's very few people that can do it.
Yes.
Do you prefer how you were doing it, or do you like what we do here?
I prefer a mixture of both.
Oh, nice. Okay.
I love when I know there's a joke there and it feels loose in between.
Oh, okay. Like you,
I mean, that's you do, yeah. You do that when you're,
you always have a go-to
because it's automatic. Even though when you're talking, there's always a go-to.
Maybe.
You never just talk and not know where it's going.
Sometimes.
Or it'll just come up and you'll take that thing that's there.
Yeah, so, and run with it.
Yeah.
Sometimes I hate hearing words ever again. Like, there's certain bits that if I ever say it again, I'll take my own life in front of the audience. Like, it's, I hate it so much. So I'll go on stage. There's been times where I'll go on for like weeks and I won't do any material at all.
Oh.
And it's not necessarily crowd work. I mean, it starts that way, but then it'll jar something and then I'll just roll on it, like keep
and
going.
And will bits come up that you've done before or that it's new? And that's how you...
I'll develop a new bit. Like, there's certain topics I want to talk about, but I'm not specifically good at sitting down and writing out the words to a bit. Like, a good friend of mine is a guy named Bob Oshak. I don't know if you know Bob. He's a comic, more of a writer, but he would write it so specifically, like to the period, like, and he memorized it like that. Like, when he said it, because he was so well crafted that you were like, holy shit, I don't write at all. Like, I just like to fling it. I don't like to be, you have to say this word or the joke won't work. Oh, you have to say
well,
it this way or the joke
won't
work.
Well, that's a testament to how good you are at doing it.
But that's what I'm saying, like the variation. Like, I feel like if someone...
I need to work on joke writing, and I have, but I also have to have the other, because if I've experimented with, like, all right, you're going to... And it has worked. Every variation has worked, but the times where I feel like I have to stick to a script, then the energy's not coming out of me enough. I've got to loosen it up. And even tonight, I don't know, some nights I get more nervous than others, and Tammy Joe's room is usually good for like just being loose and having fun. Those are the shows where I'm like, what? I just did 6 minutes and I got like an actual bit out of that. You know?
That belly room is great to develop in. I mean, I don't know why, it just is.
So now if I know what I want to start with, I will go tell myself, but do a couple lines and get loose before that, because you know you're going to go to that, but you need to say it like it's the first time that you've said it.
Okay.
Because it's not... I think all of my stuff, there is an element of act out in it, even if it's not a completely frenetic, physicalized act out. It always requires for me to...
Right, express yourself a little bit more than normal. Now, when you got here, when Adam passed you, were you like intimidated? Like, oh shit, what am I doing these comic, whatever the words are.
The funny thing was, I thought I was okay because I had been on the road.
You're headlining too, though, at that point. Yeah.
So the in-between, I mean, it was many years in between, but what happened was with all the alternative stuff, I did it, and then everyone sort of grew up. I wasn't hanging out in bars with the same people, and everyone was working in different capacities, but I never gave up the comedy. So I would do it maybe once a month, or time would pass and I would go do some storytelling show. And then it finally got to the point where I realized I'm identifying with doing comedy, but I'm not really doing it. So either I need to quit or I need to dig in and really do it. So I dug in and I called the agency that I was at and asked them for their personal, the booking person.
PA people.
PA. And I got booked, and I think I had whatever the order of events, I had worked enough to not be petrified to get booked
right.
for an hour. And I was on 24, had come back on the air, which I wasn't expecting,
okay.
but meaning I was done with 24. It
right.
happened to come back for 9 episodes in England.
Oh, that's
and so
right.
that
yeah.
was another raise in eyeballs on me on TV.
Sure, sure.
Which coincided with me really working on stand-up. So I had all this material. Oh, I remember what it was because I had done a one-woman show and I plucked all the funniest things out of it and
nice.
Used it in my stand-up and let go of like the story stuff and just picked the ones that like moved really fast. And so I had felt pretty good about the material, and it coincided with people watching me on 24. So I sold all these tickets, but
That's
it was
great.
It was amazing. But it was also people who had been watching me in a drama. So the opener
shit.
And the feature would come off stage and go, "Your audience is weird. Like, I don't know what happened." And then I realized, oh, because they don't go to comedy clubs. They're coming to see Chloe from 24. So sometimes I'd get people like holding up a costume, and it's an amazing thing to be recognized like that.
Yeah,
but when
I get it. Yeah.
When you're somebody like I was, who I was like, 24 was my only drama. I did, maybe I wasn't a hardcore
Punch
stand-up.
Punch Drunk,
but
Love,
I did,
right?
Yeah, that was from him seeing me doing, anyway, I did tons of bit in sitcoms, and that was what I'm like,
wow.
I know I'm funny, right? So I would start my hour, hey, and be in my what I thought was my core sort of driving. Well, that doesn't match with the girl that they
right.
see on TV. So I was like, oh shit, like I just shot myself in the foot because I'm like, I want to get into some nuts and bolts comedy. And they're like, who is this girl acting like she's like
we come
weird
to the wrong show?
And like low status and low self-esteem and
shit.
We want to see, so, you know, there's a few things happening. We want to see Chloe from 24. We're not interested. We see you as like a TV star. We don't see you as you see yourself. So,
right.
But also I'm not going to go out there and be like, hey guys, I'm freaking awesome. Cause that's not me. And
right.
also it's not going to, that pushes the audience away. But anyway, so I kind of.
So how do you overcome that? Because that's like a growth in itself. That's insane.
That was a really fun, you know, fun and terrible, just
right.
I would start
experience.
Out going,
yeah.
oh, you guys like Jack Bauer. And it would kind of be what you're talking about of like, oh, you're my Jack Bauer for the night. And I would, but then I developed bits that were pertaining to 24, and that depending on how hyped up the audience was about 24, I would do 5, 10 to 15 minutes of like talking about it. And then when I moved into my more personal stuff, sometimes, depending on the night, it could be really gratifying because it's like I took them from this and
yes.
I brought them into a whole other thing that they weren't expecting. But so that was, you know, and that's.
But that's a beautiful
and
thing
that's what
to
that
be able
was,
to do.
It was like 6 shows a weekend. And I finally, after all these years, you know, that thing where it's like you're not really a comic and all this. I was like, oh,
now
I know what this is. It's, you know, where we started out this conversation is you're making people laugh. You're their entertainment for the night. You're not somebody that's in this bar and you're all in the know. It's like
yeah.
these people are working. They're paying money. They're coming after work. They're coming to see you.
They
want to
have
babysitters. A good time.
They
can't,
got, yeah.
They don't want to see you like, are you being ironic? Like, what are you, they want to know what you're doing. They
yeah.
want it to go somewhere and they want to have a good time. And that was,
they
want to
forget what they came from.
Yes.
Yeah. Man, that's not easy to do. Yeah.
Yeah, and I had never done that before, those 6 shows like that. And I was like, oh,
wow.
this is what this is.
And then after that, you came here to the store.
Right. Oh, right. Oh, yeah. Sorry. And then I got sidetracked.
Oh, no worries.
Because when I came here, oh, I'm supposed to do her show right now.
She knows we're down here.
Oh, she does?
I told her to come get you
oh, okay,
when
nice.
She needs you.
You're so good. So when I came here, you know, justifiably so, I had that under my belt. So I was like, all right, I can go do.
Yeah, I got this.
And it's bombed so bad.
Here?
Yes.
Oh, we all
because
do.
It wasn't the road, and it wasn't people that had bought tickets to see me on the road. So
yeah.
now, you know, I was like thinking, oh, I'll just do this. And they're like, no, you need to, it's deeper than that. And it's also, you've got to connect with us more, and you've got to work for this more. And also, this is the Comedy Store. They've
yeah,
just,
we're not giving you anything.
They've also just seen an hour of the hardest hitting people headliners. That are giving it and taking it and giving it, and that's where people are at. They're not like your 8 o'clock show that saw you on 24 and are in some city that doesn't have a lot of entertainment, you know?
Yeah. And the Comedy Store is so hard. Also, I think the audience, you know, they're from everywhere.
Yes.
So sometimes it's like you're performing for the UN and they're staring at you like, oh, we're going to cut him or her off, right? Like, it's brutal. I had a guy up there from Gibraltar one night and I'm like, The Rock? Like, that was all I knew. He goes, at least you know about The Rock. I was like, it's a commercial, dude. Like, I don't even know what to say to you, right? But if you can get them, like, I feel like if you could get them, then you're, you know, doing something right. You're becoming universal. I used to do a lot of youth hostels to get like that because you're performing. I can't afford to go to those countries or whatever. So I would be performing for all these people from all over the place, Ireland, yeah. Sweden, you know, and they'd be in a youth hostel on Hollywood Boulevard. It was amazing, but it was so hard. And I feel like here, yeah, you're up against
Gibraltar.
I know, I'm an idiot. But
Straits of Gibraltar.
Thank God I've seen a Prudential commercial. Is that what it is? Get a piece of The Rock? I don't know. It's like, thank God I watch a lot of TV and my brain is dead. But yeah, it's just, I feel like this room, you got to follow all these headlines. Any of these rooms, they put on. And we're in LA, so who knows? Anybody could stop in. Chris Rock. Hi, Tammy. Look, she's here to get you. 10 minutes to marry. Look, she wrote a note.
Oh.
You want to say hi, Tammy?
Hi.
My
favorite.
Hi, this is Tammy Jo. We were just talking about your show and what shit it is. So.
Well, it is. I'm so glad.
No, we love you. 10 minutes we got? Yeah. Okay.
See how nice she is?
She comes so down.
She did it with a sign as to not interrupt, and we just made it an interruption.
Yeah.
I know. You did it right.
This is the Comedy Store podcast. Everything is all. Rick had to do his spot. Where's what's his name? Get out now. All right. That's a lot of airtime, Tammy. God damn you. She does run a great show in the Belly Room. What the hell is the name of it? Shut the fuck up.
And bitch.
Bitch. Yes. So she has some anger issues, but... But I think that's why her audience, because those are people that are like trying to break in, like bringers. And so she books only a few bringers and then they bring their audience and they're a lot of locals and stuff like that.
Yeah, I was going to say they're more
open.
I was going to say hip, but open is a better word. They're more... they'll go with you.
Right.
Nothing really.
They'll take the journey.
Them.
Yeah.
And then they're not like, I'm from Gibraltar. Acknowledge that because I don't live here. I don't know anything about your country like you know nothing about mine.
They all work at a dry cleaner and one of them's funny. So they brought the whole staff.
Yes.
So they're like, oh, this is great. And I don't smell like
this could be you.
Starch.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so it's like they're real people coming out to support. And then they'll see their friend who feels they're funny and then that doesn't work out, so then they're thrilled for us that have been doing it for a while, and those people become huge, by the way. A lot of breakout stars come through bringers, you know, like that's how you saw Amy Schumer used to have to bring people to shows in New York, like
Whoa.
It's just how shit
See,
works.
I bypassed the bringer.
Me
well.
Too. Me too. I got lucky. I didn't mean to say me too.
I
like
got a
I
lot
a
of.
Sorry.
I know. I did though. I felt that way when I would go to these bringer shows. I'm like, holy! Like I can't do this.
Yeah.
I did a lot of them. I did.
But they put you on as a guest, a special guest.
That's right.
Right. See, big time bougie.
Big time stuff.
Yes, I could never do. I didn't have any friends. Plus, I started when I moved here, not in a bad way, but when I moved here, I worked as a waitress at the Comedy Store. So all I knew were comics. And if I decided, because I waited tables here for 12 years, left for a year, and then came back as a stand up. That's frightening.
No way. I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. My life is.
I remember
pure shit.
You waitressed here, but I didn't realize it was that long and then left and came
back.
Yeah,
I was Mitzi's personal assistant. I was for a long time. Like,
I got to go back and listen to these podcasts and get the whole scoop.
But it was just like, I don't.
Have you watched I'm Dying Up Here?
I have.
Do you have any, were you just like, okay.
I'm happy for them. That's it.
Okay.
That's like, I love, people ask me all the time, oh my God, is that Mitzi? No. It's not Mitzi.
Right.
I was very, very close to Mitzi. And, yeah, she was very stern. She could be, She could be brutal when she wanted to. But she was also very funny, extremely charming, and there's none of that in there. Like,
right.
None, I love Melissa Leo. I'm right. not shitting on yes, her. Her acting ability is amazing.
Yes.
But when people say, is it Mitzi? It can't be. She. No one loved comics more than she did. Her life got turned upside down, and she put everything into this club. Her and her husband started it, and then he was sleeping with the wait staff on a regular basis, and it flipped her mind. She didn't, you know, she was a 40-something-year-old woman with young kids. She had four kids, but there's a 10-year gap between Sandy and Peter. So there's Polly.
Flipped her mind in the sense where she was like, well,
her life. Got turned upside down.
So she just kind of was starting from upside down, like, well, might as well. I have no other choice.
She moved from the middle of the country to help her husband follow a dream. They started this. He was touring with Elvis. And then when he would be on the road, she would turn this place. She had such a love for comedy and people that made people laugh.
So let's talk about you in the situation. Working here, did you know you wanted to be a comic then?
No, never.
Okay,
I wanted to be Meryl Streep. Nobody would let me. Oh. All I wanted to do was be a dramatic actress, a serious actress.
So you were just working here and you were like, okay, comedy.
I was
whatever.
Auditioning. I didn't even pay attention, but the only people I knew were comics. I became friends with these morons that are here,
right?
And I love them all. They were my first friend. One of my first friends was Dom Irrera, you know.
So what made you come back after that year?
My best friend passed away. His name was Freddie Soto, a very funny comic.
Oh.
And he used to tell me all the time I should be doing stand-up.
Really?
So I tried to do a one-woman show. That didn't work out. And then Dice came to see it, and he and I had been dating a little bit, 5 years. Eleanor, relax. Everyone knows your business, bitch.
We
dabbled. And I have a Me Too video coming out about it. And he came to see me because we were still really good friends. We just broke up, like split up on good terms. And then he came to see me and he was like, you're doing stand-up. And he started taking me on the road. I'm like, no, this isn't stand-up. I know what stand-up is. I worked here for 12 years. I've seen every stand-up
in
the world.
Oh, so he saw your show.
He saw my one-person show.
Yeah.
What I thought was a one-person
right.
show. But then he took me on the road, and I never did that one-person show. I got to do it. I'm jealous that you said you did one. I
yes.
want to do that. I think I'm afraid. Even though I open up on stage, but when you do it, something like that, you have to be willing to not get the laughs. I'm so conditioned, like, you got to make these people laugh. You got to move. Instead of just relaxing and telling a story.
Yeah.
That would be challenging. I remember seeing Melinda Hill's one-person show, and I remember thinking, man, she's not getting any laughs. I mean, it's an interesting story. But I felt like a dick because I was like, hey, you're missing the point. This is what and it was brilliant. It was excellent. Like, Melinda's
right.
a terrific
yes.
Performer.
Yes.
And I was like, oh, now I get it. And it was, I think Tiggs was first and hers was second. So it was Tig Notaro first. But Tig's so dry and so different. And
yeah.
I'm used to Melinda being like, bing, bing, bing on stage. And she was completely different. So I didn't know Tig as well as I knew her.
Right.
So I was just like, oh, yeah, okay. This is weird. But I got to do it. Where did you do yours? When did you do yours?
I've actually done...
A couple?
Yeah, I've done a couple over the years. I did one of the HBO
jealous.
Workspace that was on, used to
Me
be on
too.
Seward.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
Is that the same one?
I didn't
Or was
do...
it like the Comedy Central Workspace?
It is both.
I think I did one there.
Comedy Central took it over, but I did a play at the HBO Workspace because I was trying to be an actress with my, at the time, he was a comic boyfriend, and we wrote a play, and Freddie Soto directed it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was our favorite thing to do, but Freddie was the one that got us in the HBO Workspace.
Yes.
And then our material, they have to...
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah,
so we
awesome.
Kind of like...
Cross paths.
Yes, we did.
Oh, very creepy. We might have to go get you ready for...
Yeah, and I did want
get
the
you
Steve
out of
Allen
makeup.
Theater. Do you ever go there?
No, I've heard
That's
of it, though.
Great,
I think I've gone to see shows there.
That would be a
there.
Great place for
She's
you.
She's going to come down with an easel.
Because
She's going to have an easel. Oh, Rick's back.
Because it's comedy-based, but,
yeah.
but it'll give you that... I think a good feeling to just tell stories. It's
Steve
a good,
Allen
good great
Theater.
Space for that.
This is Rick Ingram.
A good in between where it's not theatrical and it's not a comedy.
Right.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Can we go over everything I missed?
Hold on. Let me explain what happened.
God, your
Tammy
hair
Jo
is so good. Right?
Thank you. It gets better after I perform.
It gets better after that sixth cup of coffee. After that performance. Boy,
I washed it today. Towel dried. You know, I did everything that
you're
supposed to do.
Plus, this fog is just bringing it up.
It curls
it's like
it,
London
pops
outside.
It.
Right, I don't want to leave now.
Okay, you don't have to. Tammy doesn't really mean anything. You know that. I'm kidding. She's doing a show upstairs. Tammy Jo came down with a clipboard.
Damn.
And
that's
she was
intense.
Trying not to interrupt us. And then, of course, we just yelled out, Tammy's here. It's like, all right, wait. Have fun, I guess. I think we just lost Mary Lee.
Yeah,
we gained
she
Rick
out.
Back.
I'm back.
So I'm excited. We were talking about one person shows. Would you ever do one?
I mean, if it will help me, yeah, I'll do one.
And she's done a bunch. Like, I went and tried to... I wanted... Initially, that's what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
And then Dice saw me in the belly room, and he was like, that's stand-up, stupid.
Okay.
So I listened to him, because that's why my life is in ruins, because I listened to him.
I wish, looking back, if I should have just been an accountant.
You
I was good at
numbers?
Math. Yeah. I mean, I took Calc 2 when I was in high school.
Oh, shit,
and it's
that's
like,
right.
What's the point? Why
I don't
did
even
I do
know what
that,
that means, but I...
Yeah.
Calculus?
Yeah, calculus. Advanced calculus. And I make fun of people and I say quasi-racist things on stage now
Did
for
you
a living.
Say a lot of quasi-racist.
Yeah, there's a guy from Hong Kong in the audience named Lee who is just fucking killing it. I mean,
life or?
No, just tonight in the audience.
Look how angry.
He was wasted. He was chugging Pabst Blue Ribbon.
Was it Feng Chao, that fucker?
I wish. No, this guy. Almost better. Just his timing was impeccable. I'd be like, what do you think about that, Lee? Be like, hell yeah. He was fantastic. Anytime there was a lull, I'd just look at him and he'd just give me a hell yeah. Like I kept calling him the Hong Kong Stone Cold Steve Austin.
I feel like he was dressed in like ridiculous garb.
Yeah, he had on like a crazy, I'm the crazy guy from Hong Kong shirt, button down, just looking like a lunatic. And
he was spectacular. Oh, now I wish I was on in the main room.
Yeah.
Damn it.
Yeah, he was good, man. It was fun. But it did lead to me saying some quasi-racist things.
Okay.
I asked
about
him about his tiny penis.
Very exciting.
He said, no, dude, it's fucking big, dog. Hell yeah.
Well, is he Mexican all the time?
I mean,
like
kind
this.
Of. He actually sounded like he was from Laguna Beach. Like that full-on surfer. I kept going, dude, Hong Kong is gnarly, brah. But then I said something about him having a huge dong. And then I said, wait, is that racist to call it a dong if I'm talking about an Asian guy?
Okay, I like
it
where you're going
be.
With this.
So, but yeah, I would do a one-man show. I mean,
no
one wants to see that. But
that's not true. People want to hear your story.
I don't think that's possibly true. I could include my supervillain origin story of seeing a giant dick going into my girlfriend in college. That really is a moment that turned me.
I thought you were
going
to say it in the main room right now, and that freaked me out.
No,
but
no.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was like, he pulled it out?
No, I told Adam Egan.
In this trying time?
He said, someone had asked me to ask you about your girlfriend in college. And so I told him a story about how I walked in on her cheating on me. And he was like, dude, I feel like I just heard Lex Luthor tell me why he became evil. And I was like, wait, you think I'm evil? And he was like, you're 100% evil.
Okay.
I was like, oh, all right. So... I think the people are ready for it. I Hate You, the Rick Ingram Experience.
There you go.
And, you know, we'll be sold out for at least half a night.
Easily. We do it in the belly room?
Do it in the belly room.
Pack it out?
Pack it out. Probably get 12 to 13 comics that I'm friends with in there. my fan base of three people.
I love
maybe
it.
Sneaking in.
There was in Vegas... last night there was a picture of this dude. I'm so mad that I didn't take a picture, but I was too tired to even do it. But it was an advertisement for this guy. I guess he's a singer or something in Vegas.
Okay.
Looks exactly like John Schieser if he was the most interesting man in the world. Like that.
Nice.
I was like, Eleanor, get the strength
God
to take a
damn
picture.
It.
But I couldn't. I was lost and I was running.
Yeah.
One of those, I can't find the showroom. Oh,
right.
Shit. I'm going to be late.
Yeah. The only time I ever experienced that, I don't know where the showroom is, was with Dice at Mandalay Bay.
Fucking Vegas, man. It's tricky. It's like.
We even had a guy leading us from the hotel and we ended up in a kitchen.
Yes.
And the guy was like, well, I think we go out this door. And we walked out the door and it was literally
just outside.
An alley. And then they called someone on the radio, and they like took 5 minutes, and they came and picked us up in a golf cart. And we were on the opposite side of the Mandalay Bay.
I'm telling you, it's Vegas is fucking tricky like that.
They just
like,
want to keep you in. They don't want you getting out or getting anywhere.
Everything looks alike. You're like, yeah. Wait, that's an exit. Oh, there's an exit over there. Oh, everybody, yeah. We're all in here.
Yeah.
Like, I felt so creepy, but that's why I was rushing. And when I saw that, I was like, shit, is that Sheezer?
That
pretty
would be amazing.
Much.
Pretty much
the
basically
guy was
the show.
Pretty much basically
he was giving
doing
the two-finger cheese.
That's great.
Julia will give me the double finger.
Will she?
And, like, she'll point with both fingers, and Corinne and I basically will immediately just, basically, Julia, pretty much bomb. Pretty much bomb toy, Julia.
She's going to start saying it.
Oh, I can't wait.
Wait, after Backpack, it's going to be pretty much.
Pretty much, like, basically.
You would just have to record her
six
on a loop.
Six and a half. Remember Dave Taylor used to call him the king of the six?
No.
And he got so mad. One night, Dave was like, oh, look, it's the king of the sixes. And he was like, what? He was like, the king of the sixes, you know, because you clean up all the sixes around here.
Oh, my
Dude,
God.
Dude, six and a half.
Six and a half.
Like, genuinely upset.
Pretty much.
These girls are six and a half. They're not sixes. Dave, you idiot.
Wasn't there a waitress on the couch once that was for sure not even in the
six
spectrum?
Yeah, I mean, we wouldn't even... I mean, that would be an insult to the number six.
Like Julius Erving may drop down on the ground and like just start punching. Like,
yeah,
no,
that would
she's
never
not
be allowed.
Six.
Dude, that's basically a negative two. You throw in the personality, negative 12.
I mean, she has knockers, but other than that, I'm not sure what.
He called me the other night, left me a message.
Thinking
was like,
of her?
Yeah.
No
one is thinking of her. It was like this long rambling message about whether I would want to go to Gilroy, California to do a one nighter in, which is like, I think it's south of San Francisco. He was like, it's $300. We drive up there, you know, 4.5 hour drive, do the show, just drive back in the middle of the night. I'm like, no, why would I do that? But I guess people do it. I just, like, you can't motivate me to go do that for.
Yeah.
I guess if you don't get stage time anywhere, maybe.
Yeah, there's a gig I'm doing Wednesday in the Whistle Stop in San Diego, and I am...
I think those guys hit me up.
I was just going to say, if it's really good, you should do it. I'll come and watch Julia so you can leave early to drive there.
Yeah, that's how I
but
didn't respond.
In all honesty...
It's like $500.
You should do it. It's a one night. I mean, if it's there, people are saying it's a great room.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'll find out Wednesday.
Right.
But just for one night, that's not bad. And on a Wednesday, you know, if you left a little bit early, I would stay with her.
Yeah.
For a while, so you can go do that because that's midweek, and that's people are hitting me up already. Like, hey, this is our favorite bar. We're definitely coming to see you. So I'm
like, nice.
Okay. So we'll see what happens.
I have. Terrible history with doing those shows. Like, I did a show once for Mal Hall.
Okay.
That was great in San Diego. I drove down there, packed out room, made a couple $100, $300, whatever, drove back, and it was fine. Every other time I've ever driven to San Diego to do a show outside of the Comedy Store, it's always like nine people. I did a show once for $200. Moses set me up with that. I got down there. This
That's
is years
Brian
ago.
Moses.
Brian Moses,
yes.
Living legend. And when I got down there, Mervis.
Okay.
This was before Mervis moved to L.A. Mervis was running the show, and he had just gotten back from a weekend of tripping his balls out.
Every weekend is that.
Coachella, I think.
Positive.
So I get down there, and it was in a bar right next to the Padres stadium, and it was the second Padres home game of the year. And the bars, like one of those bars where the whole wall opens up like a giant window because it's San Diego. And
they want
it to be like a nice outdoor vibe.
Yeah.
But all you could hear was the crowd at a baseball game. And there was like to eight people, depending on the moment, in the room watching. And it was basically just an empty bar. And Merv is all, he's got his fucking grizzly bear hood, spirit animal hood on or whatever the insane shit is. And he was like, hey, if you want to do an hour, you can do an hour. I'm like, dude, there's six people right now. Two of them are comics. Gordon, what's his name?
I know that. Gordon, I almost said Gordon Howe.
Gordy Howe.
No, yeah. I don't.
Gordon was there, and I want to say, I can't think of the other comic's name, but there were two La Jolla Comedy Store comics
there.
Oh,
okay.
And me, and then one table of like four people that didn't want to see a comedy show that were just eating at the restaurant.
And they're like, ugh, it was terrible. I got to watch this fucking guy.
I started trying to talk to him, and the guy's like, hey, man, can I do some time? And I was like, what? He's like, no. I always wanted to do stand-up comedy. I'm like, fuck yeah, this is your lucky night. Get up here. Dude went up there and started doing his impression of Chris Brown, talking about beating Rihanna. It was all about beating Rihanna, and then he would break into singing Chris Brown songs, I guess. I don't honestly know if they were Chris Brown songs, but
I'm with you on that.
And I let that go on for probably 8 minutes. And then he's like, all right, I don't have anything else to say. I'm like, okay, cool. And I went
back
up.
Wow, that was amazing. Did you work on that, sir?
This dude had that shit planned out.
That's your back pocket?
It was like an impressionist had just been waiting his whole life. Like, someday someone's going to call me up on stage. And that was his Eminem moment where he went up there. You got one shot. And he crushed it. And then I got off stage. And Merv was like, you could have stayed up longer. I'm like,
of course.
I brought up one of the three audience members to perform. Obviously, I'm not going to do longer.
Did you ever catch Mervis like when he's drinking and then he starts crying? Always.
No.
Always funny.
Nope. I've multiple times had Merv tell me the story about the time a dude accidentally sucked his dick.
No, that wasn't an accident, but yes.
Yeah. The first time he's like, I'm at this party and I got drunk and I laid down in this bed and the next thing you know, I'm getting a blowjob and I'm like, dude, it's probably one of those hot chicks from the party. And then my buddy pops out from underneath the blankets.
My buddy.
And I was like, whoa, dude, I didn't know that was you. It was fucking crazy. And I'm like.
That's the reaction?
Yeah, that's an interesting story,
so
man.
So somebody comes out of a little bit of a knockout and they see a dude.
Yeah.
And you don't want that?
No. Hey, whoa. spoiler alert, you're a gentleman.
Man, I'm not quite into this, but it does feel good.
Yeah.
Don't stop necessarily, but.
And I just thought, well, you know, I guess people do crazy things. And then one night he was drunk here and took his dick out.
Okay.
And one of the door guys, Mr. Ricky Luna,
okay,
said, you take that thing out again, I'm going to suck it. And about 5 minutes later, he took it out again, and then someone just started sucking it. We were like, now, this time, did you think it was one of the pretty ladies from
Out of
club?
Curiosity, did Ricky pop up out of the covers?
He went and got covers, because this was a standing blowjob at the back door of the Comedy Store.
And did they finish? Like, I don't even know how to... I don't remember that story.
That I don't know. I just remember...
I've never met anybody that tried, no pun intended, so hard to get in this club.
Yeah.
Yeah. Both Ricky and Mervis, but Ricky more.
Before Ricky got the job, he was super annoying, asking everyone how to get a job there. And
almost as harsh as Boone, like, let me suck your dick.
Yeah.
Like, but he was more willing.
And then
Boone
then
wanted nothing in return.
Yeah. Well, I remember Boone once sucked Big Dog from the Ding Dong Show's dick. Sucked Big Dog's dick and gave Big Dog a cheeseburger for it.
See, Boone pays his debts.
Yeah. He gives and he gives.
Big Dog was the rapper, right?
That's correct.
Oh,
Never Again. The legend. Hit song, Never Again.
Andrew called me from, he went to Pavilions or something. And he goes, hey, who's this comic? And he was with Max and Dylan. They were little-ish.
Teenagers.
Dylan might have been not a teenager. But so they were walking in, and he was like, if you give me $1, I'll sing Michael Jackson.
Okay.
And he's like, I work at the Comedy Store. And Andrew's like, really?
Work at the store.
He was there every night.
Right.
So he couldn't imagine who this fucking nut was. And the guy just started doing it. He's doing Eminem. And then Andrew goes, you said Michael Jackson. He goes, you didn't give me $1 yet.
Damn.
And then he gave him $1, and he did like something even worse, not close to Michael Jackson, with the exception of a bizarre moonwalk at the end of it.
Right. Never Again was an anthem. I think that the people who regularly attended the Ding Dong Show at least really got into. Bitch ass ain't got no class. All these motherfuckers try to rape me in the ass. Right? Never again. Never again. Never gonna get anally raped again. It just had that catchy hook.
It so does. Like that. I feel like we should get rid of Jeff Scott's
yeah,
music
get rid of the song.
And
get a live, preferably live, so that way you got the audience making noise.
You're going to have to do an impression of him because I don't think he's around anymore.
No, there's no way he's
I don't
still
know
alive.
Where.
I haven't seen Big Dog in at least 12 years, probably.
But he
I saw Barton, Blue Iris's son,
oh,
maybe
shit.
Like a year and a half ago
That's
at a gas
great
station.
Exciting.
And, hey, you got $5? I go, no, Barton, holy shit, I can't believe you're alive. Do you know me? Yeah, I know you, man. I met you at the Comedy Store. I'm Darnell. Oh, yeah, that's right. Hey, have you talked to my dad?
No,
I haven't. If you talk to him, tell him that I got a job as a painter. I was like, I don't know why I would talk to your dad. But
who was your dad?
I don't know.
Did he ever hang here? I know Blue Iris hung here.
I don't know whether that guy who was missing all the teeth that hung out with Blue Iris was his dad, or maybe that was
just
the guy.
Gave me a flashback that made my stomach do a loop.
That crazy. Hey, Don. Listen, Don Barris, you're an asshole. I don't remember what his name was. I just remember every time he talked, PJ would be like, "Hey, would you eat a rock sandwich? What happened to your teeth?"
And then he took Blue Iris in the bathroom.
Yeah. First of all, PJ, you're a scumbag. Well, now this is firefighting
Stop
fire.
Stop that. Don't say that.
Hey. Hey.
That's Blue Iris. That's how she talks.
I happen to like PJ.
I think PJ is a charming individual. Barton, man, that dude was fucking creepy. I remember I saw him once in front of the newsstand down the block from the Comedy Store here. This is when I had a mustache.
Okay.
And, I was walking by
more professional
with,
looking.
Yeah. I was walking by with Mark, and he looks at us and he goes, "Hey, do you have $20? I go, "No, Barton, I don't have $20. "Oh, hey, I know you, don't I?" I go, "Yeah, yeah. You didn't have the mustache before. It looks good on you because your face is stupid." I was like,
"Okay.
All right, sounds good." And then he immediately picked up a payphone and started acting like he was answering a phone call that clearly never happened. And Mark was like, "Who the fuck is that guy?" I'm like, "He's one of Don Barris's guys." He's like, "Oh, okay." That makes sense.
For a number of years, they all were here.
Yeah.
All just running around rampant. Like, people are like,
"Dead years,
why is
man?
The Comedy Store so crazy?"
Yeah. Yeah. I had a friend who he drank, but he never smoked or did it like drugs of any sort. And I worked with him at Islands in Manhattan Beach. So one night, some of the people I worked with were like, "We're going to come up to the Comedy Store." So they came on a Monday because that's when I performed. I was an employee at that point.
Right.
And after my set, we went and smoked some pot. And this guy smoked pot for like the first time in like 5 years or something. And he had taken Adderall or Ritalin or something.
Okay.
Also. And you could just tell he was kind of fucked up. Like,
mm-hmm.
to where like he was barely hanging on. And then Don was like, "Hey, you going to come up to the Ding Dong Show?" And I was like, "Yeah, sure." And they were like, "What's that?" I'm like, "It's this show that guy runs, and some interesting characters in there."
Okay.
Like, "Oh, yeah, let's go watch it." I'm like, "All right." So I took him up there, and the one dude who was on Adderall and weed just genuinely started looking truly concerned.
Terrified, yeah.
I'm like, "Are you all right?" And he's like, "I think I need to go." I'm like, "All right." And so I walked them downstairs, and they left. And the next day, a couple days later, I think, I went into work, and they were like, yeah, he's moving back home. I'm like, "What?" They're like, "Yeah, he just said he's had enough of L.A. He's moving back home." The dude had lived here for like 7 years, but one night, partying at the Comedy Store and watching the Ding Dong Show, and he was just like, "I got to get out of this town, man." He was not involved in entertainment in any way. It was just like
Jesus, I was in the Ding Dong Show and I didn't leave. That's sad.
Yeah,
That's
I was
scary.
Too. I got attacked by Sam the Armenian Comedian one night. He tried to pull my hair out of my head while yelling the N-word
at
me.
He's a hairdresser.
Yeah.
He was working on it.
Me and O'Neill kept spitting spit wads at him from right behind him. And Don kept Darnell, what's going on? I go, "Well, you know, this Armenian dog keeps barking over here." And he got real mad. He charged up there, started pulling on my hair, just screaming the N-word.
Oh,
and,
my God.
And Don is laughing and trying
he
to pull him
off.
Did
he see you? Or, I mean, I'm just asking.
Yeah, no. But Don just always introduced me as
Darnell.
This, yeah,
okay.
This is Darnell. He's the blackest motherfucker in the world. And and so Don's trying to pull his arm off of my hair and just dying laughing because he just keeps dropping N-bombs.
Yeah.
And Don's just like, oh, it's so good. It's so good. I'm like, what a fucking lunatic.
He is certified. Soon, you used to think Don had control.
Yeah.
Now I think he's one of them.
Yeah.
He's just as crazy as they
are. He's not the shepherd anymore. He's just the lead sheep.
Yeah. He just has the car.
Yeah.
And then it's like, have you ever seen the clown car empty?
No.
With all the
I mean, not in recent years. I remember back in the day, he'd pull in and like five of them would get off. And, get the shit out of the trunk! They'd all have to carry
every time,
stage decorations up.
Every
giant
time,
picture of Ari.
Oh, yeah, for no reason. Every time Schizo gets out of the car lately, he's missing his shirt.
Always.
I don't understand what's
Schizo
happening.
Schizo and Jason Galern both cannot ride in cars with a shirt on.
Why Jason Galern?
Just for years, he would always pull into the lot in his van or his truck, and he'd not have a shirt on. Be like, Ingram, what's up, man? You cruising? I mean, obviously, you are. No shirt. I just always love that.
One of the greatest Schizo things happened 2 weeks ago now. On a Monday night, we're here hanging out. I think I was telling you around as easy a little bit about it, but
yeah,
technically, it was Monday night. It was 1:30. There was two people in the original room.
Oh, right.
And Ryan O'Neill, myself, and Nick Youssef were kind of the comics left.
Right.
And Youssef was like, oh, I'm not going in front of two people. And he buttoned his sweater and left. And
yeah, sounds right.
I mean, he was like, oh, I'm way classier. Yeah. And I'm like, boo. So he left. So O'Neill's like, should I go on? I'm like, of course you should.
Yeah.
And Don Barris had brought me up to apologize to me for all the Me Too things he's done to me.
Sure.
And then told me how funny I was and prayed that I wouldn't press charges. Nice. So then there was like an audience member that was like, yeah, man, finally, man, these bitches are out of control. So O'Neill's in the back and he's like, oh, I definitely want to go up and I need to talk to that guy.
Yeah.
Right? So he's like, man, it's just bullshit. These bitches are going crazy. Right? So Don,
obviously, they're the problem.
He immediately brings up O'Neill. And O'Neill's like, hey, man, so let's talk.
Yeah, what's with
he,
you?
He immediately
sir?
Starts fucking with this guy. There's two audience members. So the one guy is, you know, I'm just saying, man. You know, it's refreshing to hear that girl, you know, not want to press charges because this is bullshit, right? So I was like, I don't know if I helped or hurt us, and I apologize to everyone out there.
I mean, I think everyone in the room was experiencing a Me Too moment with this guy.
Exactly. But there was only like, that was it in the room. Those two, Don Barris, myself, and O'Neill. So then now all the ding-dongers come in. And at this point, I decide to make them more comfortable to tell stories. So I'm going to tell a story about something fucked up I did to my ex-fiance that maybe he could press charges for.
Okay.
Right? So then O'Neill talks about his fiance raping him. Weird sort of event.
Sure.
So 90% of this shit we're making up, but for the most part, we're just trying to get the audience. So then Ryan goes, it's your turn. And when he said your turn to the guy, Dave Chappelle walked in and he goes, what's going on in here? And I go, we're trying to get these audience members to open up. And I think he thought I said, we're trying to get Ryan to open up.
Okay.
So he came in, he sat down, and Ryan started doing a bit, like, kind of along the lines of what we were talking about, just to kind of pull this guy to get him to talk, because I think he realized we were setting him up.
Right.
And he started clamming up. So Chappelle's watching, and Ryan's like, you know, like that. And he started to, like, pass it back to the audience member. And Dave's like, no, man, keep talking about that. Really open up about that. And he goes, come on, man. Brian, you got to open up. And we're all like, who the fuck is Brian? Right?
Because
he heard us say Ryan
yeah.
but it
He'd
was,
heard it
Dave
wrong.
Was
yeah.
late. It was 1:45.
Right.
He was a little bit drunk. And so he starts fucking with him and Ryan go back and forth. They I think it started out something like, who do you want to hang out with, this guy or this guy, the audience members? And then Chappelle was like, can I throw my hat in the ring and be one of the guys he hangs out with? And O'Neill was like, yeah, let's get Chappelle in the ring. And Barris is like, no, Chappelle came in too late. He missed it. He missed the entry. And Brian's like, why? I don't even care if he calls me Brian. Let's fucking hang out. And Chappelle's like, put my name in the ring. I have millions of dollars and I want to be in the ring. And Don's like, okay, fine. You're in the ring. And all of a sudden, Ryan started talking about like he didn't like to shower in high school because he had a weird looking penis. And Dave's like, okay, I immediately can't relate to that because I have a big giant dick, but I really want to hang out with you. Right?
Okay.
So it's so silly.
Yeah.
And it goes on. And then for a long time, he made them run the light. They kept flashing it. He's like, fuck them. They ain't got control over you. You own the stage. Stay up there, motherfucker. And Ryan's like, the whole time he's thinking, I'm going to get fired. They're never going to let me. The manager's flashing the light now. Chappelle's like, knock it off, you know?
Yeah.
So we realized after, like, Chappelle left. We all laughed. It was a big goof. It was great. Ryan was like, highlight of my year.
Yeah.
All excited, right? We're out in the parking lot, and we're like, man, the only people that witnessed this were me, Don Barris, and the Ding Dongers.
Yeah.
So he had Schizo recap it. And Schizo.
I was like, wait, weren't we talking about Schizo?
In the slowest form I've ever heard, Don Barris puts the light on him. He's filming him. He's like, Schizo, what did you see tonight? He goes, Ryan O'Neal was on stage. Dave Chappelle walked in. What happened? He goes, Ryan was on stage. Dave Chappelle came in. Basically, repeat it what Don said. And he goes, and then he offered him millions of dollars. And he said he wants to hang out with him, and he has a big penis. I was like, oh, my God. We just got a Me Too story for Dave Chappelle.
Yeah.
Like, Brian was like, that's pretty much exactly
what. Yeah, I mean, that's a solid recap for someone known as the schizophrenic surfer.
Well, we're going to put it out there, so look forward to that.
Absolutely.
O'Neal also said we have to start telling our listeners that they have to subscribe and they have to rate us. And I said, just tell them to rate us anyway. And he said, ask for 5 stars only.
5 stars only. If
guys,
you're listening,
5 stars only for Chappelle's new opening act.
Yeah.
Because he did give him an opening gig all week while he was filming his special. Ryan O'Neal opened those shows. So if you see Chappelle's special and they're laughing, it's because Ryan O'Neal.
You're my best friend.
And so he says, give us 5 stars. So you have to give us 5 stars.
Give us 5. If you think we're a 1-star podcast,
just tell us, but don't put it.
Yeah, but definitely do it in person because that's the only respectful way to do it.
My earrings are already off, so let's do that.
And if you want to tweet at me about it, then that's fine. And also, remember, Josh Nasser will never be on this podcast.
And you can tweet him.
Yeah, tweet at Josh Nasser. That we're talking about him. It's never flattering. And
yes,
now
he is officially banned from being on.
Blacklisted.
Blacklisted, that's right. It's not just a show on ABC or NBC or CBS, whatever channels it is.
Yeah.
But it is a show